Hey everyone, and welcome to the Futuristic Enterprise Podcast, a collaboration between Leaderonomics and Pitcher Eats. My name is Kim, one of the hosts for this show, and in this podcast series, we interview leaders of sustainable enterprises and dive deep into their life-changing stories and the amazing work they are doing around the world. In episode 4, I spoke to a rising star in the agriculture industry, Neil Pitachai from Siam Organic. Neil has won numerous awards, one for even being the Chivas Venture Champion in 2017. His company, Siam Organic, is also the only enterprise in Thailand to receive B Corp certification. An amazing feat. Here's what he had to say when I caught up with him. Thank you, Pitachai Neil Deshkraisak, for doing this interview with us all the way from Thailand. But right now, I'm not sure which country are you at right now.
I'm in Thailand.
Oh, okay. So could you just like introduce yourself and your background and anything about Siam Organic and also your role in Siam Organic?
Okay, my name is Neil and I'm from Thailand. I am the co-founder and CEO of Siam Organic / Jasperi, a social enterprise that I co-founded in 2011 basically help eliminate farmers' poverty and to provide delicious and healthy, innovative organic products for the global consumers. So in my role as a CEO of a small company, I do everything, you know, starting from, you know, meeting consumers, doing, giving out rice samples in supermarket, to delivering products. And nowadays, my role is more about the team, hiring the right people, making sure the values and the culture in the team is healthy, making sure people are happy and fulfilled in their role, and also to grow and scale up our operations.
Sounds like a still everything role.
Yeah, it's just more focused on people. It's more people-centric now,
yeah,
and less task-centric.
Okay, so let's just go into a bit of the problems that we face in the world, especially in Thailand. Could you probably just describe the problems that the farmers are currently facing in Thailand? Because there may be some similarity to what Malaysian farmers are facing as well.
Sure. And I think it's similar to a lot of the small-scale farmers all over the world, actually. Thai farmers earn just about 40 cents per day, which is 6 times below the poverty line. So the poverty is quite prevalent among the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look deeper, what the problems are, there are a few issues. One is that they have really low yield, you know, high costs. And a big part of that is because the actual farming hasn't progressed much in the last 40 to 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still farming the same way, you know, they were doing 40, 50 years ago. There hasn't been a lot of knowledge. There hasn't been a lot of R&D or technology that has been incorporated into the farming. So they're kind of left behind, you know. And yeah, so that's a big part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that, you know, commodity products like rice, the prices has been going down. And also, yeah, over time, this is not sustainable with inflation and cost of living rising.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the farmers' average age are over 62 years old.
Mm.
So they're getting older and older, and the younger generations don't want to be farmers. So this is quite a crisis. And I think it is similar in Malaysia as well.
Yeah, I think we face the same issues. But in your opinion, why do you think like more research and development and more investment are not going into such area, knowing that like rice is actually our staple food in Asia?
I think there's a disconnect between the academic world and the real world.
Mm.
So like, especially in Thailand, where a lot of researchers that are funded in agriculture are funded by the government, you know, various NIA, National Innovation Agency, and so forth. So there's a lot of amazing researches that are done by, you know, scientists and academics, but they're never implemented on the ground.
Mm.
So So I would say, like, you know, they write a lot of research papers and innovation, but there is no one to really take all of that knowledge and actually implement it on the ground. So I think that's one of the major issue, because also a lot of farmers are not educated. They don't have access to that kind of information. So there's this kind of missing, you know, middle in terms of to connect, you know, these two worlds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, like, if, like, on your personal note, then why is it so important for you to, like, take on this mission to tackle this issue?
Well, actually, if I was to give you, like, very honest answer, it's pretty selfish, because really it makes me happy. It gives meaning and purpose to my life.
Mm-hmm.
It allows me to wake up every day and not feel like I go to work.
Mm.
It allows me to wake up every day and feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose by making a difference to this farmer's life. So I guess, like, you know, it for me, it wasn't necessarily about, oh, I wanted to just focus on this. I mean, I found out about this issue in 2011, and, you know, I started to dig deeper into it. And the first couple of years after that, I spent, you know, living and working with the farmers to try to understand their life better. And they became my family.
Mm.
So then after that, it became more personal, because now, like, I got to know them. So it's now, you know, something like that I'm fighting for is more personal. But on a bigger picture, it does give me a lot of purpose and happiness in life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, like, going into, like, the business part, because we talk about why do we want to grow it, but like, could you just describe, like, the business and operational model behind, like, Siam Organic?
Mm. Yeah. Well, we actually use a pretty, like, old model. Actually, it's the cooperative model. So the farmers are typically organized in groups anyway, which they call the cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
So for our model, we didn't want to change that, I guess, governing structure in the community. But what we try to do was we enhance that and modernize and make this cooperative turn into an organization, basically. So we train them, we teach them skill, business skill, so that they're operating more as a business.
Mm-hmm.
And once we, you know, build that capacity, then we can do business with them. But then it took, of course, a few years to empower them to build that capacity in terms of, you know, productivity, efficiency, you know, quality standard and all of these things, and that require a lot of training, communication, experience, and so forth. So our business model is very much about empowering farmers and not changing too much in terms of the structure in which they work at. But what we did, you know, change a lot is their mindset, is to make them understand that, you know, before you were growing rice for subsistence, you know, for consumption. And if you have any leftover rice, then you sell. But the goal wasn't to make money. The goal was to feed your family.
Yep.
And, you know, when we went in and do that, we said, well, you know what? You know, there's a cost to what you're doing, you know, cost of your land, cost of the input and everything. And this is, you know, the revenue. And you should look at how to increase that revenue, because you're going to need that money to send your children to school. You're going to need that money for medicine, you know, for shelter. So they started to understand the concept of accounting. They started to understand the concept of profit, you know, investment. So that over the years, within our model, has empowered them to become like micro entrepreneur.
Yep.
And once they become a whole lot of micro entrepreneurs, then we can start creating products. We can start having quality standard.
Okay.
So it's our business model is very much enhancing what's already there, which is the old cooperative model.
So, like, I guess, like, one of the challenge that most of the social enterprises or, like, people working with the humanitarian side of things are the mindset. I just want to know, like, how do you overcome that to have like the farmers understand your concept and especially entrepreneurship?
Yeah, it is. You have to keep it really simple. So I would say that the first thing is you have to speak the language.
Yep.
So what I found was the fact was that I wasn't the one preaching. At the beginning, I went to find the leader in the community, and you know, identify these influencers, you know, in the community, and then I communicate with them and I connect with them on a personal level, and then I ask them, you know, how would you explain this concept to your people in a way that they would see the value in it? So they started to teach me those communication strategy and method. And that allows, you know, because the thing with changing mindset is it's not about the mindset, it's about the heart.
Yep.
If the heart is open, then it's possible. So I think you have to build trust first. And that's the first couple of years that we did. We didn't rush what we're doing. Like a lot of, you know, social enterprises try to rush the process. They set an ambitious goal, you know, in 3 years you have to grow this much. Doesn't really work that way when it comes to people, because it does take a couple of years for them to internalize, you know, new ways of doing things, to absorb it, you know, to change. And you have to give that little time. And those time we took in terms of building trust, getting to know the leaders in the community, developing communication strategy. And, you know, once we have all of that trust and relationship, then we can move the needle. But yeah, it comes from the leaders first. If you can't convince the leaders, then nothing is really going to move.
I think it's a very good like reminder for anyone working in a social enterprise space, working with the humanitarian side of things. I think it's quite a good reminder for what we're doing as well. But thank you for that. But moving forward, like the star product of what Siam Organic is doing is jasperi rice.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. And understanding like jasperi rice is going into the European markets.
Yes.
Yep. That's a very, very awesome achievement. But how different is jasperi rice from like other normal rice? Like, if you were to be a salesman and you're going to pitch like to audience right here, like how would you sell it? Sell jasperi rice?
Yeah, well, it's basically it's a unique variety of rice. It's a superfood rice, so it's a rice, but it's extremely nutritious and it's soft and delicious, unlike brown rice. So it's really super simple. It's very easy to eat and enjoy, unlike brown rice, and it has amazing antioxidant property, which is even more than a lot of the superfood that we hear about. So it's this intersection of just a very delicious and healthy product. And also, it's still affordable. So, you know, like, I call it the world, like, first staple superfood. When we think about staple food, like rice, noodles, bread, and so forth, yes, they do provide, like, energy, you know, every day, but there is no nutrition. So apart from sugar, it doesn't really have any other vitamin and benefit. Whereas jasperi rice provide, you know, mineral, vitamin, antioxidant, energy. It's extremely you know, healthy for you, but it's a staple food. It's rice. So this is a really, really unique product in terms of like, it is a staple, but it's also a superfood.
Is it already in Malaysia? Like,
Yes. We sell through stores called Just Fruits. And we are about to go into a Caring Pharmacy. And Jaya Grocer in Malaysia. So that's just a matter of time now. We've concluded the deal. So yeah, but our distributor are called Just Fruits, and they have, I think, 7 or 8 healthy store in Malaysia. But they will also supply to these other bigger supermarket, like Jaya Grocer and so forth.
Looking forward for you to change the landscape in Malaysia. Okay. I know that like Siam Organic has like won like a few awards, and especially the Shiva's Ventures in 2017 International. But what's your success so far with SEM Organic, like in terms of impact, in terms of revenue, in terms of scalability?
Yeah, so I think that we have been very impactful. We started with 25 farmers' family in 2011, and now we were over 2,500 family, which is about 12,000 people. Mm. And you know, they're earning 14 times higher income than they were earning before, which is a significant difference for them, from just 40 cents per day to almost $6 per day. So that's in terms of the social impact. And you know, we have gotten a third party auditor, like, you know, B Corp, like IAX Foundation from Singapore, to audit our social and environmental impact. So that has helped with having, you know, transparency in terms of what we do. So, in terms of the scale, in terms of the scale itself, you know, we are still currently, you know, small. We are roughly around just $500,000 revenue, but we have been investing a lot in terms of the export international market growth, and we expect, you know, to grow, you know, up to 10 times over the next, you know, 2 years. But we realized one thing with scalability was that we could have scaled earlier, but if we had done that, we would have struggled with operational issues. Because, like, you know, that's one thing with scaling. If I'm producing, let's say, 10,000 pack of rice per month, and then if I'm producing 100,000 per month, or 500,000 per month, it requires different operations. It's totally, it requires more working capital. And we realized, like, even when we had the opportunity to go really big, to go from, you know, $500,000 to like 3 or 4 million within 6 months, that we had those opportunity and we decided not to go for it, was because we realized that it would bring a lot more problem. And so it actually took us 2 extra years to build the foundation so that we can support the growth. And that's something that we were learning. You know, there are so many pieces in order to scale. And I haven't even mentioned the team, which is the most important piece. So yeah, there are all these pieces which we felt like that we were not ready, and we have seen other, you know, company crash and burn because they were growing too fast. So we kind of held back a lot in the last 2 years, and set a more realistic expectation in terms of growth.
That like in terms of impact, like, because people are always like questioning scalability every single day. I'm sure you have people like investors or like people in the business world who always asked you about like scalability. What would you answer to someone who would come and ask you, like, why aren't you already impacting like 10,000 farmers or like 50,000 farmers at this point?
Yeah, I mean, there are, the answer to that for me is simple. If I give $1 to a million person, that's $1 million in impact, right? I'm impacting 1 million person. But that dollar does nothing. Doesn't change anything. But if I'm increasing that income by, in this case, you know, like $5 every month, for, you know, 12,000 people, you could say that the dollar value is similar, but in terms of the difference to people's life, is much more sustainable. And that is, often I when I talk about impact, it's not about the number of people. It's the difference it makes to their lives. Because like if I'm just a big company and I do my CSR program, I can give a dollar away to 2 million people and I can say that I helped 2 million people. But I didn't help them. I just gave them $1 each. And what can they buy with that? And there's no sustainability behind it. So when often people that talk about scale investors, they don't understand the sustainability aspect of it. We're in this for the long run. You know, we're not in this just to present nice numbers. And, you know, they don't have to deal with the repercussion of it. you know, they can put the pressure on the social entrepreneur, but the social entrepreneur have to be ready to scale. They have to understand what it takes to scale. Mm. And often, you know, those people that ask those questions don't understand that. Mm. They just want to hear, you know, big numbers.
Okay.
And I think that we need to educate them really about what it takes, you know, for sustainable progress.
True.
Especially when it comes to communities.
Yep. Yep. Totally agree. But yeah, so I was reading like in one of your article talking about how I think especially the Shiva's Ventures one. I think how are you like trying to wanting to list yourself or Sam Organic on the stock market and impacting like 100,000 lives. So how how far are we into achieving that? Like because like having a social enterprise to list on the stock market is like something huge.
Yeah, I think that was my dream, you know. That was always my dream. And I thought I was gonna be able to do it in 10 years. but as I realized, I realized that it took Jack Ma longer to list on the stock market. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, maybe I wasn't being realistic because you know I believe it took him like 12, 13 years to list. Yep. So I had to readjust my
but we're in this for the long run, right? So yeah.
Yeah. So I think realistically, year 2025.
Mm.
I think we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll be big enough, we'll be ready. We're investing a huge amount of money to build like a building for our new office and everything,
yep.
which we're about to start construction.
Yep.
So yeah, we're making a lot of investment. I think, you know, within 5 years, we can get there.
Yep.
So that's probably like 5 years slower than what I thought. So
better be there than, you know, like it's okay. Like
well, yeah, I mean we didn't
better late than
so
never.
Far, so I've seen a lot of social enterprise, you know, fall off. So I think the fact that we're still surviving.
Yeah. Monumental change.
It's already like quite an achievement.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so in order to like achieve that, of course, like we're talking about improving like efficiency and capacity as well. Like, were there any like technologies that are involved in the making of the rice, or like what technology that have you introduced to the farmers?
Mm. Yeah, well, in the rice, obviously, we work with the research scientist who's been developing rice for 30 years. So there was a lot of science behind that. But in terms of what we're doing right now is incorporating technology in terms of we develop an app, you know, for the farmer that we can use to audit, to do audit for organic certification and collect like farm data, cost data, yield data,
yep.
you know, revenue data. So we are incorporating some level technology in our operation now. And the goal this year is through our, we have a Xi'an Organic Foundation as well.
Yep.
So through the foundation, the goal is to identify the best technology in the world, agricultural technology in the world, and implement it, you know, within our group. So this year, one of the main goal is to we have already identified some of the leading organizations in the world in this field, and we have already reached out to them, and we're going to do some kind of partnership with them to transfer the technology.
Okay. Okay.
So we don't want to build a new technology anymore. We try to do that.
Right.
And yes, it costed a lot of time and money.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that there are like amazing technology all over the world in agricultural space, even from like Israel. You know, all, some of this country have amazing technology.
Mm.
And we just need to transfer it, implement it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really the goal this year.
Mm. Better to like partner, leverage on the resources.
Yeah, partner and leverage, because I'm sure like there's a potential for win-win collaboration in a lot of these relationships.
Yep, yep. But that's the whole idea of social entrepreneurship as well, right? Like it's for everyone to move forward together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one thing that has been lacking in
exactly.
this field.
Yes, yes.
Because like everyone is like doing the same thing.
Mm.
In even in one country, you can in Malaysia, I'm sure there are many companies working with farmers, mm-hmm. you know, for the goal of helping them get out of poverty.
Yep.
They never sit down together and talk about how they can collaborate and help each other.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Thailand, I know that some of them see us as a competitor, as opposed to working together. They want to share. They don't want to share information.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that we have to change as well,
yep.
because social entrepreneurship is unique. It's not like typical entrepreneurship where, okay, yes, if you are Uber, you have to beat Grab or,
yep.
you know, but I believe anyway that for social entrepreneurship, you can go together.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same, you know,
yeah.
from one social enterprise to the next, it's not the same.
Yep.
You're not offering the same thing. So I think that's something that we need to be more open to,
mm-hmm.
To in order to progress further.
Yep. So talking about like social entrepreneurship, like people always like confuse social entrepreneurship being charitable, being like you having to put all your profits back into like the social cause, which is somewhat true. But how important is it like to be profitable in your kind of business, and why would you think so?
I think it's important on a lot of levels, because the reason we have social entrepreneurship was because we felt that, like, I'm a social entrepreneur because I saw the NGO and the charity were not solving the problem. Now, if the NGO and the charity and the foundation, if they solve all the problem, I wouldn't need to be doing what I'm doing. You know, the NGO have been in you know, the northeastern part of Thailand where I work for more than 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the debt has tripled during that time. And they have poured in, you know, tens, hundreds of million dollars, whether it's the UN, UNDP, UNESCO, Oxfam.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not criticizing this organization. I'm just saying that the outcome hasn't been exactly good.
Yep.
So then you think that, why? Because then you look at it and you go, well, because you get free money.
Yeah.
So you get money. How do you get money? You write proposal to get money.
Yeah.
Then you give reporting. So actually it's all on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're good at writing proposal and report, you can get funding.
Mm.
Your actual implementation doesn't matter that much. So then, yes, it becomes this kind of academic exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't actually make a difference on the ground. So I think with social enterprises, you are working on the ground.
Mm.
You're working with real issues. You're hands-on. You're a practical entrepreneur. People ain't going to give you money for free.
Yep.
Because they go, well, no, you're not a foundation. You're not a charity. So you not have access to that kind of capital. And, you know, so then you are forced to make it work.
Yep.
You are forced to make revenue. How are you going to pay rent? How are you going to pay for your staff salary?
Yep.
You have to make revenue.
Yep.
So I think it's critical that for people that wants to be social entrepreneur, understand that,
mm-hmm.
that the business side is even more important,
mm-hmm.
I can say.
Yep.
I mean, they're both equally important. It could be like 51% business, 49% social,
mm-hmm.
It could be 60% business, 40% social,
yeah.
That's up to you.
Yeah.
But if the business part doesn't survive, your mission failed.
Yeah.
So
true.
You can't help anyone.
Exactly.
You know, I often ask, you know, this expert, social impact expert, and I said, if a company doesn't make any revenue, how can they have a social or environmental impact
mm-hmm.
as a social enterprise?
True.
And they can. So actually, like, the revenue is linked with the social or environmental impact.
Mm-hmm.
So then that has to be the focus. And if you can't make it sustainable, you need to have a goal when you will make it sustainable.
Yep.
You know, I've seen a lot of hybrid model where, you know, they rely on donation money for the first 2 years.
Yeah.
And then after the third year, the donation money is down from, you know, 80% to 20%,
yep.
and then increasingly become more like a social business.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay to have a hybrid model,
mm-hmm.
whatever, but you need to be really clear about where the money is coming from.
Yep.
And how are you going to sustain and grow your revenue?
Exactly.
And if you don't have that clear, you're not going to be
so
successful.
So if you like this podcast, stay tuned for next episode.
And the social side.
I'm Kim, signing off. I totally agree with that. Okay, moving on, like being a leader, like I think you're a very admirable leader especially for at least my team. I think one of the things that while following you on social media, we realized, and from your stories, we realized like you've worked really extremely hard at one point. Like you had to be hospitalized. That's what I remember from my partner. How important like self-care is to you as of now?
Yeah, I think this is so important. I think it's well documented now that you know, CEO of like startup, they suffer from depression, you know, committing suicide, and that's not even like social entrepreneur, because we have even more difficult life. So I think that self-care, especially the mental care, mental health, is so important. I think I learned that over the last 3 years, because I, you know, like you said, I was hospitalized for stress, and my body just failed me, and it was scary because I thought I was gonna die, and I've never felt that way in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when that happened, it kind of woke me up, and so self-care is something that you need to do, practice every day.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's meditation mm-hmm. every night, you know, working out at the gym, exercise. And you really need to set that time aside, because you realize, like, I used to work, you know, up to like 16 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really sustainable.
Yeah.
You know, to sleep like 4 hours a day and work 16 hours. It's, you know, your body will give up, your mind will give up eventually. So I realized that, okay, if I work less, but I'm more effective, then it's going to be better anyway mm-hmm. for everyone.
Yeah.
So now it is that I have to set aside time every day for self-care. And I think this is one of the things that is not talked about
yeah.
enough in social entrepreneurship,
yep.
that we have so much stress. To deliver,
yeah,
and you know, like I have like a almost like a therapy group now of CEO that I
okay.
that I have a group therapy session with
okay.
once every month or 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and these are like, you know, CEO of big social enterprises, and we just share, like mm-hmm. and we just listen with empathy, we feel like we're not alone, you know, like all of this really really help,
yep,
and I think that. You need to have that kind of support system.
Yep. So, like, have there been times, like, when you say, like, this is it, like, you're going to throw the towel in and, like, yeah.
Well, I think for me, on a personal level, you know, it did cross my mind, of course, because things got really tough. And, you know, I think I share a story with the DBS Foundation that I had, like, I think $9 left in my bank account,
mm-hmm.
or $7 actually,
mm-hmm.
At one point. And that was only, you know, 3-4 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, and I always say this to my team when we face crisis, and I said that, like, you know, this opportunity that we have, like, at this very moment, it's probably only going to come around once in our lifetime.
Okay.
And if we don't make the most of it, we're going to regret it for the rest of our life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
An opportunity to make a difference in the world. Now, we're lucky to have that opportunity. So we want to make the most of it. And I think that, you know, everyone in my team share that, you know, feeling. And you know, so you want to take it as far as you can, and you just can't give up until you literally know that, you know, you can't go any further.
Yep.
And for us, you know, I believe we will never hit that point, just because of the determination of the team.
Mm-hmm. But since you mentioned about like once in a lifetime and, you know, making a difference, like, could you like describe like to me, like a person or an individual or farmer story, like pre and post, like Selma Organic?
Yeah, so one of our favorite farmers, her name is Memma, and about 3 years ago, she was a chemical farmer, and she had about I think it's about 3 acres of land, $10,000 of debt.
Oh.
And her land were chemical farm. Within 3 years, she has paid off all her debt.
Wow.
Her land has increased from 3 acres to 7 acres.
Wow.
She's bought more land from her profit. Her land is now certified organic.
Mm-hmm.
But most importantly, her 3 children who are working at a factory near Bangkok on a minimum wage are now back on the farm working with her.
Wow. So like attracting young people back.
Yeah, and this like saved her family as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one, story. I mean, there are hundreds of stories. And we share this story now on our Instagram called Jasmine Rice. Mm-hmm. And we have like Farmers Friday, where I think the first Friday of every month, we share one farmer's story.
Okay.
So, you get to read and get to know these incredible individuals more on a personal level.
Yep.
And over time, we try to be the messenger for that story and amplify the transformation that they have been through. And I always say, like, for us, like, we didn't do it, they did it themselves.
Exactly,
we gave an opportunity, but they still needed to work hard, they needed to listen,
it has to come from them.
So it's not like all of them is gonna do that. But I think as a social enterprise, all we can do is to give opportunity to people who don't have opportunity and who deserve it. And I think that's really our job.
Yeah, it's really amazing to hear. But so knowing that you really travel a lot, like, just a fun fact. So which country you love the most as of now, like, and why?
Wow. that's a really difficult question. I have to say Australia.
Wow.
Because I grew up there.
Okay.
So it's close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Australia in general is that it's not just the nature, it has obviously stunning nature, but but the people. I think in general Australian people are very kind, generous, loving, and open-minded people. I find maybe because it's one of the most multicultural country on the planet. So how many Australians are there? Almost none. If you look in the history, there are former convicts from Europe. And then you have a lot of Asian people, because it's the closest Western country to Asia. So you have this, just all immigrants basically building their life and following their dreams. And I found that, they do encourage people to be kind, loving, caring. They care about sustainability. So these are the values that I identify with, So I would say that would definitely be, the country I love the most.
In fact, like, Australia is one of the highest, having the most social enterprise in the world as well, listed in 2019 or 2018.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a surprise. I didn't know that, but yeah, it's the mindset.
So, just last 2 questions. So what would you wish the many individuals or entrepreneurs to do more today into contributing to the sustainable future?
I think a short answer to that is to use your skill for good.
Yep.
So whatever skill that you have, and everyone have different skill. If you're a great marketer, if you're a great storyteller, if you're a great musician, whatever it is, just think of using it to do good in the world. And that could be in small way, just volunteer 2 hours every week in your community. That could be to work for other social enterprises. Or mission-driven organization. Nowadays with internet, also you could reach out and offer help and transfer your skill to those people or organizations that are making a difference. But it's very much action-oriented. Find your gift, find your skill, and use it for good. Because I think that often we have been taught that we develop the skill to make money.
Yep.
be really great at something and then you'll be rich.
Yeah, that's what we thought.
Right? Be the best doctor so you make the most money.
Yeah.
Be the best lawyer so you make the most money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my challenge to people is like, be the best lawyer to make the biggest difference.
Mm.
The money will always be there. I mean, you know, if you're really good at something, you're not going to have problem getting money, you know. Yeah. So I would say that develop more skill, develop, become really good at something, then you can make a bigger difference.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so just one last advice, like this, like, I mean, being on a social entrepreneur journey, it can be tough, it can be lonely, because like people just don't understand what you're trying to do, or like you're trying to do something new, and it's just not easy to change people's mind. So any advice for anyone going to take on this journey or they are already on the midst of this journey?
Yeah, I think two things. You know, one is you need to find a mentor.
Mm.
You need to find someone who's been, it's like going to war, you know.
Yeah.
You want to find someone who has been in
war.
In war before. Because any advice that you get, and you get advice from a lot of people who don't know what they're talking about. Because people like to give advice.
Yeah.
But you want, yeah, and that's a fact, you know.
Yeah.
You want advice, and just as importantly, you want empathy and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who will give you empathy and understanding and advice when you need it are the people who have been there.
Yep.
So find those people,
mm-hmm.
keep them close to you, you know, your mentor, your tribe, you know, your people, because they will give you love when you need it, understanding when you need it, empathy when you need it, and love when you need it. So I think that's super, you know, that's super important.
Yep.
And the second is hope. You must always have hope.
Yep.
Because even in the darkest times in my journey in the last, you know, almost 9 years now, there have been times where I was going to bed and I thought that we may not survive the next 2 months.
Wow.
Or the next month.
Mm-hmm.
There have been crises that have made me, you know, think that the world is ending.
Mm.
But I've always had hope.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would go to bed and I would do my little prayer and I go like, you know, please, I need a little help.
Yep.
And you know what? That little help always came.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, some people would just say it's luck.
Mm.
And of course it would, you know, happen one time that it's luck. But throughout these years, it has happened so many times that I was saved by something, by someone, by, I don't know. It's incredible. And, you know, I guess you can read this book like The Secret. Yeah, all this book that talk about, you know,
talking
to the universe, right? Putting your intent out there to the universe and it will answer back to you.
Yeah.
In Buddhism, we have karma.
Yeah.
You know, like if you make good karma, it will come back to you.
Yeah.
And I really believe that. I'm not saying that we should rely on luck in life.
Mm.
But I'm saying that if you're doing the right thing,
always
have hope that something good will happen.
Yep.
And just when you think that, you know, things are not going to work out, they always work out. And you just have to be open. You just have to keep your eyes, your ears, your brain, and most importantly, your heart open.
Yep.
For help.
Yep.
For allowing. You know, don't rely on your ego, be egoless, and just, you know, allow these wonderful things to have and reach out to people if you need help.
Yep.
I think a lot of the time we feel like it's lonely because we are holding it in ourselves. We are fighting this battle and we go, ah, it's so hard. But when really there's a lot of people that want to fight this battle, but they don't have the opportunity to. And we need to allow them to join. We need to reach out. That's why community is so important. And you know, I'm always like happy to if any social entrepreneur reach out to me from anywhere in the world, and I will give them my time. You know, I believe that I learned something from them as well. But I believe it's so important that we have this sense of community, because at the end of the day, we all want the same thing.
Yep. So as much as I'm interviewing you, I'm also learning at the same time. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're well. My pleasure. We love, you know, the work that you do at Pisha Eats. Super proud of what you guys are doing in Malaysia.
Thank you. Okay, that's all for the whole interview. Thank you so much, Neil, for your time. That's Neil Peter Chai, and I must say it was truly an honor to interview someone who didn't give up even when things were not looking so bright. I believe that the level of perseverance and empathy Neil demonstrates can help us all rethink how we approach our own social enterprise. So if you like this podcast, stay tuned for our next episode. I'm Kim, signing off.
You've been listening to Leadernomics FM, the science of building leaders.